Hi, team.
Hey.
Hi.
Hey.
Hey, Natasha.
You're listening to Radical Nourishment. My name is Natasha Monnadou. I'm an artist and narrative strategist with the Food Culture Collective, and I'm joined by a crew of emerging audio artists from all over the US.
I'm Dana Wedderburn.
I'm Alejandra Salazar.
I'm Shefali Patel.
I'm Nino McQuown.
These are the voices of our first inaugural cohort of Ears in the Field, a fellowship that we at Food Culture Collective convene to uplift stories of sovereignty and self-determination found in moments big and small. All season long on Radical Nourishment, the fellows and I are introducing you to some radically humane and creative voices working in various facets of food sovereignty. What do you have for us today, Nino?
So this is a really personal episode for me, and for any listeners that are in the United States, you'll have been hearing a lot lately about trans people and gender-affirming care, and essentially in this country, the right wing right now is trying to use trans folks to rile up their base. So at this point, 22 states have passed some kind of ban on gender-affirming care, and more states are considering it, and there's just so much nasty rhetoric out there. So honestly, it can be really hard as a trans person to consume media right now, either because it's talking about how much we're being targeted, and that feels relentless, or because it's not talking about it, which also doesn't feel good. So for this fellowship, I really wanted to create something about gender-affirming care as care, and that's really how I've experienced it. So for me, getting top surgery was kind of a profound experience of love, and food was very central to that. I reached out to my community in Baltimore and Washington, D.C., and I asked about how feeding ourselves as part of recovery after top surgery is a way of healing really not just our bodies, but also these deeper wounds of rejection and invisibility and shame that lead a lot of us to feel like we don't deserve care in the first place.
Nino, who did you talk to for this story?
I reached out to a whole bunch of folks in my community. I was looking for others who had felt food was really central to their experience of recovery. And I talked to a number of friends. And for this episode, you'll hear interviews with my friends Leah Drew and Dream Emanuel here in Baltimore and the DMV. And I also got connected with a new friend whose name is Ty Wilkerson, who's a stand-up comedian and chef in Baltimore. And so it was also a really fantastic way to meet other folks who are obsessed with food and also trans.
Now here's the episode.
It's early May in 2021 and I'm home from the hospital. The window is open behind my head. Honeysuckle winds around the security bars, and in the deep green thick of it, some baby robins are nesting. They sing all day for food. Me too. I lie in my bed. I'm propped up on the birthing pillow my friend Kyle insisted was absolutely essential top surgery equipment. Surgical drains dangle from my stitched wounds. Blood falls down through them into these pendulous little bulbs that lie under the covers with me. I've got nothing to do. The drugs mean I can't focus my eyes on the TV screen or the pages of a book. I listen to my friend read poems on the phone from Canada. Nothing to do but wait for my body. The little birds sing in a curtain of leaves. I wait for my body to heal. This is what the first week after top surgery is like. You can't move your arms. You're in pain, you can't shower, or even really reach, for example, for the cell phone by the side of your bed. If you're lucky, as I was lucky, you have a safe place to be and time off work to recover for at least a week. And you have a bed that you are lying in, 24 hours a day. You're on serious painkillers, so your brain doesn't really do focus. Your chest is wrapped in a compression vest, thick bandages, medical tape, little yellow bolsters sewn over your own refigured and transplanted nipples to keep them in place while they remember they were always a part of your body. But what makes this moment in the first week so strange is how long it took to get here, how hard you had to hustle just to go this slow.
The process to get a surgery appointment was pretty long.
This is my friend Leah. We met building gardens together. He got surgery just a few months ago.
So basically what happens is you need two letters of recommendation. I guess to say that you're trans and you're not going to sue the surgeon.
And when I did get the letter,
I still couldn't get it because, surprise, pandemic, so.
And that's Ty. We met through queer community in Baltimore, where they're a stand-up comedian. They got surgery in Maryland last year.
And then I had a new doctor, and she wasn't there for all of the previous conversations that I had with my other doctor. So I had to meet her, and her response was, you can't have top surgery if you're not on testosterone. And I said, well, I don't think that that's true. And she was like, nope, and left the appointment. She just left the appointment after that. And so I ended up having to call the director of the department.
It was a lot of work, honestly.
And this is Dream. We met during the 2020 uprisings in D.C. They traveled to California for their surgery this past fall.
Technically, it took me almost 2 years to get the right surgeon that I wanted. I need to, one, feel safe around this doctor, make sure that he answers all the questions that I need, and also making sure that if I need a support, how he's going to respond to that.
You're looking at dates, and you're looking at before and after photos. There's the fact that if you have a fat body like mine, or a black body, or a disabled body, you'll be asking yourself whether this person even knows how to work with it. Whether it's possible for them to imagine making something beautiful with your flesh and fat and skin. So there's all that. And then there's medical insurance in the United States.
Now I have to do all these tests to make sure that I'm fit for surgery.
You know, and then I called the surgeon, and then I had a long wait for a consult, probably about 3 months. So at this point it was July. So then in September, I talked to the surgeon and I said, yes, cut my tits off. And then he gave me the date of January 30th, which was the earliest I could get.
And even when I had the date set and I had everything planned, they called me 11 days before the surgery and was just like, yeah, your portion of the bill is $4,000 and we need half of it up front in order to do the surgery. 11 days before I was supposed to have the surgery.
And I feel like when it comes to just the financial aspect, that is just a job in itself.
And so once that was all out of the way, I started thinking about what am I going to do? Because you can't use your arms. And so how am I going to do things? How am I going to get out of the bed? What am I going to eat?
Food is love.
So you know the love language thing? Mm-hmm. I had assumed that food was one of the love languages. It turns out that it isn't, but that just goes to show that the love languages are just bullshit.
Maybe it's because food is our whole world when we're infants and don't know the difference between ourselves and the universe. Food is love, and it's also other feelings. Nostalgia, infantilization, gratitude, scarcity, growth. Feeding yourself means acknowledging that you carry your own survival in your hands. Food is care, and it's control, it's sovereignty, and it's interdependence. Food is love, and love is complicated.
It's so hard for people to feed me for some reason, because I'm like, what? You can still make so many things that don't have dairy or gluten in them. But even when I go to my mom's house, she's just like, what can you eat?
My original plan was not to let anybody know. Mm-hmm. I wasn't going to post it on Facebook or Instagram about me getting top surgery. I really didn't. I was just like, okay, well, I'm either going to take care of myself or my partner is going to support me, you know?
So, no, I did not do any planning for myself as it related to recovery from my top surgery. The planning that I did do was how my wife and son were going to eat. And I don't know why. myself was just the least of my concerns. And it wasn't until I think maybe a week or so before the surgery. And my wife was like, what are you going to eat? And I was like, oh, well, yeah, I'll just eat whatever is in the house. And she was just like, I don't think that that is true. I don't think you're going to just want to eat whatever's in the house. We should probably get you some things.
I feel like over the years, because of testosterone and taking it, I have become more allergic. Mm-hmm. But also, I realized that it can be a mix of me not being in tune with my body at a young age and not realizing that Oh, I've been allergic to this. Like, I'm allergic to grapes. Like, when I was younger, actually, grapes were a survival food for me. Mm-hmm. Like, that was something that I knew that, okay, it was cheap to buy. It can hold me down, sustain me for a little bit until I get my next meal, you know? Mm-hmm. And now, like, I feel like I became allergic to all my survival foods. Mm-hmm. But I also feel like it is, like, a psychological thing, too. Mm-hmm. To a degree, you know? Because I feel like I'm not in that place anymore. I'm not in a survival mode. So I feel like my body is forcing me to change the way I eat and change the way that I think about food, too. Because it's just like, I don't need to have this food anymore because there is abundance of other foods now.
We're talking about survival and abundance. About what nourishes you when you have no other options and what nourishes you when you get to choose.
I got to an extremely bad place in the spring of 2022, and so I was like, I've waited too long to do this.
I mean, it's a life and death situation. Like, to be honest, like, if we can be honest, it was life and death for me at that point because I couldn't see any other option for me in wanting to just be in the world because my gender dysphoria was just so, it was crushing, right?
Being able to choose gender-affirming surgery is about survival. But what nobody really tells you about transitioning, in all its forms, is that when you leave survival, when you wake up on a gurney in the land of abundance, grief and complexity are waiting for you, patient as a nurse. You're vulnerable, you're hurt, but your old coping mechanisms don't work anymore, at least not if you're butch like me and your main ways of coping are taking care of people and lifting heavy things. And this is something that you did, on purpose, with joy, because you needed to change. But maybe you also have to grieve for the self that's gone now. And you find that as hard as it was to get here, it is also hard work to heal.
When I talk to people, nobody mentioned the mental toll that it takes on you. I experienced like a lot of just like depression and then happiness, but then also guilt because my wife had to do everything for me. And I felt like I couldn't take care of myself.
You are actually like pretty much saying goodbye to like this part of you that has also carry not just safety, I feel like. It has also carried like a burden too. It has also carried like so much of like mixed emotions that I feel like a lot of people don't realize that you need that care.
The first thing I ate after top surgery was a high tie oh yes snack cake from a variety box of snacks my friend sent me in the mail. She couldn't come in person. She was waiting 8 months pregnant for her own time of transformation and recovery. I hadn't asked her to send anything. In fact, I hadn't really told anyone either, with the exception of need-to-know coworkers and collaborators. But my partner told them. And it was my partner who asked me what I was going to want or need in the week after surgery. And my partner who took down my incredibly specific instructions on how to make a rice bowl just the way I like it, with homemade sauerkraut and roast chicken, and chopped cucumbers and tomatoes, and my partner who brought it to me multiple times a day with cup after cup of turmeric tea. And it was my dear friend who sent me that 10-pound variety box of snack cakes, and my mother who let me use her grocery ordering account to buy all that chicken and vegetables, and my other friend who recorded a whole book of poetry on voice memo for me to listen to when I woke up every day.
So the first thing I remember eating after surgery is sugar-free Jell-O that my mother brought to the house.
And then my other friend made me a mysterious casserole that I'm not sure what form it was supposed to take, but it was chicken and cheese, and it had breadcrumbs on the top. But I just mixed it all together, and it was delicious, and it tasted like a Super Bowl party.
Yeah, I had like fruit and something else because I was in this hotel that didn't like... Like, they have Whole Foods across the street, so that was, like, one good thing. But, like, I mainly was trying to have, like, pineapple, because they were just like, yo, have pineapple juice. I was just, like, gobbling on pineapples most of the time I was there.
My friend was very aware of my allergies when she put together the food train. She did it, like, with my wife, and so all of the food that I got was actually allergen-free, and things that I actually wanted to eat. And so, again, that was just another moment of me just feeling just really seen and loved.
I mean, one nice thing about people bringing me food is I was able to lure them into my house and hang out with them for a while, because I was getting pretty bored and lonely. I got to hang out with people. I got to show them my drains, which is, you know, gross, but I did ask if they wanted to see them first. I am an obnoxious scar guy, so
I didn't fall, you know, like my like everybody called me, like they supported me, like financially they supported with like hot meals, they supported with just like sometimes I would just like need somebody just to text, you know, like. So I just had that. And it's just like those micro things too. Like, you don't need to have people physically there all the time, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, people can show up for you differently in different spaces and different capacities.
The first time I get out of bed and go outside again after top surgery, one of the baby robins is out of the nest. It sounds almost too on the nose, I know, but it was spring, and this is true. The little bird is perched on the sun-warmed lip of a wool hammock that I have strung up under the back stairs. It's the most precocious of the three fledglings, and I will learn the earliest flyer. For now, it's doing nothing, perched on the hammock, looking at me. So small that it has to take its time managing the return to its nest. Top surgery is something that you work toward for years. It shouldn't be that way, but it is. And when you get there, you find out that you're at a beginning. So excited to be an obnoxious scar guy, trying to show your brand new nipples to anyone who wants to see. 2 years in the future, I try to put myself back in that body. It is hungry. Hungry and stiff, twinging with a wild electricity in the skin as the nerves in my chest re-knit and ignite. Everything hurts. But how do I say this? My body feels wonderful. It's spring and I'm just starting out. Sovereignty isn't something that anyone achieves alone, without a healthy serving of the ridiculous. My wings don't work. I've had to ask for what I wanted, and then I've had to let myself be fed. Big, big thanks to Ty Wilkerson, Leah Drew, and Dream Emanuel for talking to me to make this episode. Leah draws comics and manages a greenhouse in Washington, D.C. You can catch Ty's shows and follow their incredibly funny stand-up on Instagram at @who_they_them_Ty. Dream makes gorgeous, beautifully scented candles from ingredients sourced through other small black and queer-owned businesses at We Live in Truth, We Lit. You can have their candles shipped to you anywhere in the nation by visiting weliveintruth.com. I also want to thank my friend Marcus, whose experience after top surgery helped to inspire this story. And to my trans and non-binary siblings, I love you. You deserve every good thing.
Radical Nourishment is a project from Food Culture Collective and Heal Food Alliance. At Food Culture Collective, we're transforming the story of food to help us collectively reorient to food as life source, compost legacies of harm, and grow a culture of care. Heal Food Alliance is a national multi-sector, multi-racial coalition building collective power to transform our food and farm systems. Radical Nourishment is produced by our Ears in the Field fellows, as well as Zach Rosen and me, Natasha Monnatau. It's edited by Zach Rosen. To learn more about today's story, visit the links in our show notes.